Good morning, everyone. Today we are going to discuss one of the most vexing problems in all of Jewish philosophy, the problem of free will and divine foreknowledge. Now, you might think that nobody really cares about this stuff anymore. The truth is that I am asked this question perhaps more than any other question in Jewish philosophy. People don't always realize that they're asking this question, the question of how could God know the future and at the same time my decisions be free. Nevertheless, very frequently this question is actually at the root of what's troubling people when it comes to theology. We will see today, God willing, seven or eight approaches to this question. It's remarkable that there are so many answers, and we'll see that they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, and we will also see that there is considerable doubt and debate about what a number of important thinkers actually opine concerning this crucial issue. We begin with the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. We're on page 9, where the Mishnah tells us, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Hakol Tzafoi V'Rishus Nesuna. There are a number of readings of this Mishnah, but the way the Rambam understands it is that the Mishnah is addressing this problem. Hakol Tzafoi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the future, everything is foreseen, and yet, somehow, HaRishus Nesuna, we have freedom. The Mishnah is telling us that there is not a contradiction. Both are true, and what remains unexplained is how that is possible. The first approach we're going to see to answering the question is articulated by Rav Sadia Gaon in Emunos Videos. Vim Tomar, the Kasher Yada Hashem Shadam Yidaber, Haim Yitachen Shu Yishtok? Anu Manichim Shashem Yada Kvar Peula HaSofish Shel HaAdam. Hanasis achar kol machshava mitzido v'achletaso. Ukemoshen emar shem yodeh machshavos adam megomer. If God knows that a man is going to speak, is it possible for him to remain silent? So since HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the conclusion of all of our decisions, then presumably we don't really have the choice to do otherwise. Note, by the way, that Rav Sadia Gaon assumes that God's foreknowledge holds true not just with respect to the actual actions that we're going to do, but even with respect to the deliberations. Continuing, V'im tomar, kevan shu yodea b'meshi yevik v'yadashe adam yimred divaro hare muchrach adam lahamros kedesha tiskayim idiyaso. Thus, if God, for example, knows we're going to sin, it turns out that we must sin, otherwise his knowledge will be faulty. Haomer Kain, Ein lo raya sheyidias habore es hadvarim hi sibas havayasan. The solution is that there is still no proof that God's knowledge is the cause of these events. V'eino ela davar shenidmelo o she'amro bezadon. Such an assumption is based basically on an unwarranted assumption or an intentional error. Ki ilu yedias Hashem es adavar hisibas heyos adavar. Were it the case that God's knowledge was the cause, ki az hayu advarim kedumim she'en lahem reishis kevan she'en reishis liyediaso oso. Ela anu bedea shu yodea kol advarim kefi amitas heyosam v'chol davar shemamtzio kvar yada sheyamtziuhu v'chol davar mehen sheyivcheruhu ha'adam kvar yada sheadam yivcheruhu. Now, Rav Sadia Gaon's words are somewhat obscure, but it seems that the crux of his answer is as follows. While it's true that God knows in advance what we are going to choose, his knowledge is not the cause of our choice. Instead, our choice is our own. For example, I know that the sun is going to rise tomorrow, but my knowledge of that fact is not the cause of the sun's rising. So too, God knows what we are going to choose, but his knowledge doesn't cause it. Put differently, God knows what we are going to freely choose in the future. So the knowledge is not causative. Another way of thinking about it is that just because something is true, it doesn't mean it's necessarily the case. It could have been otherwise. Certain things we discussed several weeks ago when we read the beginning of the Rambam's Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah are true and necessarily true. For example, God's existence. God exists and he necessarily exists. We exist, but we don't necessarily exist, meaning to say it could have been otherwise. We happen to exist. So does this table. But it didn't have to be that way. Well, God's knowledge of the future does not contradict our free will, because while it is the case that the things that we're going to choose, we are going to choose them, that doesn't mean we necessarily had to choose them. They could have been different, and therefore God's knowledge of our future free choices is not causative. Those of you who took Dr. Johnson's class in college will remember that he offered a proof and showed how the assumption that there's a contradiction between free will and foreknowledge is simply a logical fallacy, the slip modal operator. So I'm not going to go through that today with you, but that's really perhaps what the Rav Sadia Gaon is saying. The next source, I don't think we'll read it together inside, the Rivash makes this point in a little more, in a way that's a little clearer. This might be what the Rambam means in Mor Nevuchim. You also have that on the bottom of page 9. But I think we're going to move on now to the second solution, which is on page 10, and that is the Rambam's primary solution in Hilchos Tshuva Parakei. Shema Tomar, V'halo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yodea Kol Ma Sheyeh V'Kodem Sheyeh Yada Sheze Yeh Tzadik O Rasha O Lo Yada. Im yada shu yatzadik, I afshar shelo yatzadik. Ve'im tomar shi yada shi yatzadik, ve'afshar shi yarasha, harei lo yada. Hadavar alburyo. The old question answers the Rambam. Da shetshuva she'ela zu, arucha me'eretz mida urechava mineyam. So I don't know if we'll finish today. Ve'kama ikarim gedolim v'hir v'harurim ramim tuluyim ba. Aval tzarech ata leida ulehavin b'davar ze shani omer. כבר ביארנו בפרק שני מהלכות יסודי התורה שהקדוש ברוך הוא אינו יודע מידיע שהיא חוץ ממנו כבני אדם שהם ודעתם שניים. אלא הוא יסעלה שמו ודעתו אחד. ואין דעתו של אדם. Okay, so let's stop here and try to explain what that means. So the Rambam first notes that it may be impossible for us to fully understand and appreciate the solution. However, the resolution lies in distinguishing between human knowledge and divine knowledge. God's knowledge, the Rambam writes, is not something that's external to him, but rather it's part of his essential being. This contrasts human knowledge, which is not part of our essence. Just to give an example, yesterday I learned a shach, today I forgot it. Now, if it were the case that my knowledge was part of my essential being, who I am, what my essence is, so then it turns out that when I learned that shach yesterday, I changed, and now I'm a different person. Or, to give a more benign example, let's imagine a person's color changes. They get a sunburn, so they go from white to red. So, did they change? Are they essentially a different person? Certainly not. And then a couple days later, when it changes to beige, so have they changed again? No. It's their skin color. It's not who they are. It's not their essence. So, that is true with respect to knowledge. However, this cannot be true with respect to God. Because were it the case that God's knowledge is external to him, like our knowledge is external to us, so then it would turn out that God is always changing. Now, first of all, as we noted several weeks ago, God can't have things that are external to him at all. That would contradict his achdus, his simplicity. But besides that, if it were the case that God acquired new knowledge, so that would imply change. For example, here the Rambam is also alluding to a very important point. How is it that we know that God knows the future? So, from a philosophical perspective, the Rambam answers, because if he didn't know the future, then he would be changing. Because when he acquired the new knowledge of the events that take place, so that would be new knowledge, which means he would have changed, which is impossible. The pasuk says, "Ki ani Hashem lo shanisi." God does not change. So, what turns out then is that God's knowledge is not like ours. We know things from observation or from contemplation, and that knowledge is external to us. Thus, we can forget it, or we could acquire new knowledge. When it comes to divine knowledge, God's knowledge emerges not from something external to him, but from his essence. Put differently, as the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, Gimel Chaf, God's knowledge is not different from his essence. And the Rambam explains this a little earlier. The passage from Mor Nevuchim I just quoted is on the bottom of page 10. And the idea that God's knowledge is different from our knowledge is explicated in Parak Beis of Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, Halacha Tes, also on page 10. Kol anim ta'im chutz min haborei, mitzur rishon ad yitush katan, What the Rambam is writing is that since God knows himself and recognizes his greatness, his beauty, and truth, so he knows everything, and nothing is hidden from him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makir es amito v'yodea osa kimo shehi ve'eno yodea b'dea shehi chutz mimenu kimo she'anu yodim she'en anu v'da'atenu echad aval abore yisporach hu v'da'ato v'chayav echad mikol tzad u'mikol pina u'v'chol derech yichud. So this is essentially what the Rambam was saying here, resolves the question of divine foreknowledge. To put it a little differently, the Rambam is telling us that we are correct in our presumption that foreknowledge would inhibit freedom. In that sense, he might be arguing with the first answer. However, that is only true with respect to human knowledge, the type of knowledge with which we are familiar. But it is not the case when it comes to divine knowledge or inherent knowledge. When it comes to divine knowledge, no such contradiction exists. And since he and his knowledge are not separate, it does not emanate from external sources, so there is no problem. As the Rambam writes, again here in Gimel Chaf, we say that various events are known to him before they take place. He constantly knows them, and therefore no fresh knowledge is acquired by him. Now, having read the Rambam's solution, we have to ask a question. Is the Rambam simply telling us that we can't understand this question, or has he answered the question? We'll see a little later on. The Ravid critiques the Rambam. He writes, why have you asked the question if you haven't provided an answer? Perhaps the Rambam thinks asking a question is valuable in its own right, but even if that were not the case, the Rambam, it would seem, has answered the question. The Rambam has answered that when it comes to knowledge that's external to something, so then there would be a contradiction. So to put it a little differently, and this is the way the Avodas HaMelech explains the Rambam, the way that I think I heard Rabbi Tursky explain the Rambam. For a human to know the future, because a human acquires knowledge through observation, so that would mean that the future has to already exist, which would in fact preclude the possibility for free will. God, on the other hand, does not acquire knowledge through observing that which is external to him, but, as we said, he knows that which is true inherently. So therefore, the means by which God acquires knowledge does not preclude the possibility of free will. And if you want to see this idea is, as I said, developed in the Avodas HaMelech, which is on page 11 of your source sheets. There are other ways to understand the Rambam, but I think we'll go on to the next approach. Yeah?
So basically, it seems like most people are going to reject the assumption of the first answer, that divine foreknowledge.
Don't. So far, yes.
What is it about human knowledge that would mean that divine foreknowledge automatically means that we have no free will?
What would it be about, I mean, non-divine foreknowledge? What would mean, what, why would it be the case that if there was human foreknowledge, we wouldn't have free will?
Why would anyone reject the first answer?
It's a good question. If it's a logical fallacy, then why not accept that? So, as I mentioned before, it could be that the Rambam accepts that answer as well. There is one place in Maor Nebuchim where he does seem to say that. The advantage of the other solutions is that they might be much more intuitive. Meaning to say, the first answer notwithstanding, you still get tied up in a knot when you try to understand that, because God knows what I'm going to do. He knows what I'm going to do freely. Okay, but how could I do otherwise? If you take a look at the Or Sameach, he raises that point. The Or Sameach really rejects all the answers, but ultimately comes down to the fact that we can't really understand it. The first answer, again, even if it could be shown that it is logically correct, is something that's really hard to feel make sense. I don't know if the Rambam solves that problem, because it's also hard to wrap your brain around his solution, but in a sense it is a little bit more intuitive. It offers a distinction that we can understand. Okay. The third approach, until now, the two approaches we've been assuming, except that both of the presumptions are correct, namely that God knows the future and that we have free will. The next couple of solutions will question that. They perhaps acknowledge that there is a contradiction, and nevertheless, and because there's a contradiction, we have to question one of the two assumptions we're making. Either question divine foreknowledge or question free will. So the first possibility, and I would argue that the solutions we are going to see now and consider, the two possibilities, either that God does not have foreknowledge or that we don't have free will, are not the mainstream positions. For the most part, as we'll see, they are rejected. The mainstream view is that both are true and somehow compatible. But it's worth seeing them, among other things, because, as we'll see, there are some very prominent thinkers who espouse these views, and also they're well known in the Welt. So it's important to know what they actually say and what they don't say. Yes?
Maybe it's more a question for after, but how could there be other answers to the Mishnah Pirkei Avos that says?
The Mishnah Pirkei Avos does not have to be read as the Rambam reads it. If you take a look, for example, at the other Mefarshei HaMishnah, they don't necessarily read the Mishnah like the Rambam. Okay, so the first place we're going to see it, this view is most famously known as the view of the Ralbag. He presents it in Milchamos Hashem, Chela Gimel, Perek Vav, as well as in other places. However, we're going to assess it in the Ravid, Among other things, because the Ralbag is not the most mainstream thinker, and he does have a number of somewhat radical positions, this generally being assumed to be among them. And therefore, therefore, if it turns out that this is what the Ravid is saying, so we might treat that a little differently. So let's look at the Ravid. Amar Avram, lo nahag ze mechaber minag hachachamim, she'ena damaska bodavar velo yeda lashlimo, vu echel b'she'elos kushyos v'niach hadavar b'kushya, v'chziro le'emuna, v'tov hayalo laniach, Hadavar b'tmimus ha'tmimim v'lo ye'orer libam v'yaniach da'atam b'safek v'ulay sha'achas yavo hirhor b'libam. The first point that the Ravid makes is a methodological one. You shouldn't raise a question that you can't answer anyway. Now the Ravid acknowledges that when you learn Gemara, we frequently have questions raised with no solutions. The Gemara might raise a question and end with a teku. However, the Ravid is particularly concerned here when leaving an unanswered question might cause a person to have major theological doubts, and therefore it would have been better left unasked. That's, of course, assuming that people didn't think of the question on their own. However, as we noted before, the answer to this might be that the Rambam did in fact answer the question. Okay, now we turn to the Ravid solution, which, as we'll see in a moment, he admits is only a partial solution. The afal pi, she'en tshuva nitzachas al zeh, tov hu lismoch lo ktsas tshuva, v'omer. Im hayu tzidkas adam verish ato, tiluyim begzeras abore yisborach, hayinu omrim, she yidiyaso, he gzeraso, v'haysa lanu ha-she'ela kasha me'od. Were it the case that man's virtue or wickedness depended on the decree, upon the gzera of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then we would have to acknowledge that there is a problem here. Meaning to say, the Rambam is distinguishing between knowledge of the future and a gzera. Ve'achshav shehaborei hisir zu amem shalom yado umasra biyad ha'adam atzmo, but now that God has surrendered his power to control man's life by giving this power to man himself, meaning to say that God, as we know, has the power to do anything, including control man's actions. But, as we discussed last week, or 2 weeks ago, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyira shamayim, which the Ravid is saying, means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given up that power. Hesir zu hamemshala miyado. Meaning to say that while it is true that God is all-powerful, in creating the world and allowing for free will, God has given certain things up. This is reminiscent of some of the answers given to the question of how could anything exist at all if ein od milvado. How is there a possibility for the world to exist if nothing else truly exists besides God? And one approach to this is the idea that God limited himself or constrained himself, sometimes known as tzimtzum. Well, the Ravid's saying a similar thing is true with respect to our freedom. God limited himself, surrendered certain power, to allow us to have free will. And that being the case, en yidiaso gzera, aval hi ki yidias ha'atzdagninim, shiyodim mikoach acher, ma yihiyu derachav shel zeh. The knowledge of God is like that of the astrologers that know through some other means what will be. This analogy to yidias hatstagninim, astrological knowledge, meaning to say, what astrologers, the means by which astrologers are capable of knowing the future, is going to be the key line and the most difficult line in this Ravid. What exactly does the Ravid mean when he compares God's knowledge to that of the Itzdagninim? V'adavar yadua, the Ravid continues, shekol mikra adam katan v'gadol masroa bore bekoach ha-mazalos. Another time we'll talk about what mazel is. But for now, let's just take him at his word that God gave certain authority, certain power to the stars. Ella shenason bo hasechel lios machziko latseis mitachas amazel. Yet he also gave man the ability to escape his fate that's decreed by the stars. Vehu hakoach hanason ba'adam lios tov o ra. So this koach to escape mazel is rooted in man's seichel, and it's with this ability that a person can choose to be good or evil. V'abore yodea koach hamazal, v'rigav, God knows the force of the star and its times. Im yesh koach b'seichel lehotzio lezeh miyado, whether the seichel can overcome the mazel or not. V'zu hayidia ein gzeira. And this type of knowledge, the type of knowledge, foreknowledge that God has, is not a gzeira. And then he concludes, v'chol zeh einenu shaveh. So the Ravid begins by acknowledging that his knowledge isn't a decree, meaning to say that it is contingent. Our freedom is therefore preserved. Why then is his knowledge not a degree? So the Ravid says that he's divested himself of this power and given it to human beings. What then is the nature of his knowledge? It's like that of astrologers who know through some other force what's going to happen to a particular person. However, just as the astrologer's knowledge doesn't limit their freedom, so too God's knowledge does not prevent self-determination. Now, had the Ravid stopped there, I would have said that God has total foreknowledge. But then the Ravid writes that that is not the case, because while the astrologers know a person's future, a person also has the capacity to emerge from the shackles of mazel and control his own destiny using his intellect. So God knows the strength of the mazel, and he knows whether man has the intellectual prowess to emerge from within the mazel, the moral strength to defeat his fate, and accordingly the Ravid concludes that the knowledge is not a decree. Well, what is he saying? So one possibility, and we're going to suggest two readings of the Ravid, one now and a second one a little later. But one possibility is that the Ravid saying that God knows the choices a person will consider. He knows his fortitude, but he does not actually know what a person will choose. He knows his nature, he knows his mazel, but by limiting himself and giving man the seichel and the ability to overcome those inclinations, God has essentially given up his definitive foreknowledge. And that's what he means when he says that it's not a gzeira, because in fact it is contingent. So it is true that if God knows we're going to choose X, then we cannot choose not X. But the Ravid seems to be saying that since free will is sacrosanct, so then foreknowledge is limited. Now, the first question we have to consider is it possible that something is hidden from God? Doesn't this contradict divine omnipotence and omniscience? The Ravid answers this question when he says that God has relinquished that power. Meaning to say that God has the power to know the future. If he wishes, he can. Though, if he did, then we wouldn't have that freedom. And by limiting himself to give us the freedom, he has, in fact, given up his knowledge of the future. Why? Because the Ravid seems to be assuming that there is, in fact, a contradiction. Now, what about omnipotence? The Ravid seems to be assuming the following. If it is the case that it is impossible to know the future and yet free choice to remain, then saying that God does not know the future is not problematic. Now, why would that be? So we generally define omnipotence as God can do anything. He's kol yachol, there's nothing he can't do. However, that definition is faulty. For example, God cannot destroy himself because he necessarily exists, as we discussed several weeks ago. God cannot duplicate himself because he's inherently one. God cannot, according to the Rambam, become corporeal because it is by definition impossible for him to have a physical body. These constraints are not chesronos because they're definitional. When we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kol yachol, we're saying that he could do anything conceivably possible. If it were the case that he could destroy himself, that would mean he's not inherently and necessarily existent, which would be a chisaron. So omnipotence doesn't mean that God can do anything. It means God could do anything theoretically possible. This position is articulated explicitly by the Rambam in another number of places, as well as other Rishonim, like the Rashba. It may in fact be a debate, and perhaps another time we will return to this question and consider what it means when we say that God is omnipotent. But for the time being, we will accept it for the now, that if in fact it is a contradiction, a logical contradiction, perhaps even more powerful than logic, that God can't know the future and we have free will, and God chooses to give us free will, so then his lack of foreknowledge is not in any way a chisaron, and accordingly would not be a violation of God's omnipotence. Now, not everyone agrees with this reading of the Ravid. For example, the Rivash that we quoted earlier distinguishes between the Ralbag and the Ravid, and later we will consider an alternative. However, even if it is the case that Ravid does not hold of this, as we mentioned, other Rishonim do, among them the Ralbag, we'll see a little later on that Rashi may be of this position, though that too is equivocal. And surprisingly enough, there are even Achronim who seem to adopt this position, among them the Shla. The Shla, on the bottom of page 11, begins by quoting a number of statements in Chazal that highlight God's foreknowledge. For example, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hera lo l'adam harishon dor dor v'dor shav, dor dor v'chachamav, dor dor v'manhigav. Sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Adam HaRishon all future events, including the decisions people are going to make, who they're going to vote for. Seemingly, this source indicates that God's knowledge about the future is definitive. He told Adam HaRishon who is going to win the next presidential election. Not so, says the Shla. Instead, this means that God showed Adam HaRishon the natural progression that would emerge based off of current circumstances. He writes, V'hine kodem asiyas adam eze inyan hein tov hein ra. Again, we're at the bottom of page 11. Kvar ayu muchanim elu adrachim. There are two paths a person could take. Hare yesh derech tzadikim v'derech v'shayim. V'shoresh kulam ritzon ha'elyon. V'hiya yediyah. Yediyas atzmus ritzono b'sharshe kol ha'hishtal shalos. Sounds like he's saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's yediyah is with respect to the shoresh of all that eventually emerges, all that is mishtal shel. Skipping a little, pavur zeh einam muchrachim ki mi sheyirtze lahagbir veleilech mizeh ha'hispashtos v'yirtze liftoach mekor acher meha mekoros v'yamshich kefi ritzono az koach ha'bechira biyado lahagbir rak HaKadosh Baruch Hu hera la'adam lefi psichas ha'mekor shel ata eich re'uya liyos ha'hispashtos. Based off of current circumstances, what is going to be, but not what has to be, because circumstances can change. This might be similar to what the Ravid meant when he said that a person using his seichel can overcome his mazel. Rak HaKadosh Baruch Hu hera la'adam lefi p'chisas ha'mekor shel ata. So the Rashla is saying that based off of what things are now, God can tell you what they will be. Eich re'uya liyos ha'ispashtos. Ubevadai, alofim v'ribuos inyanim. Shayu re'uyim liyos lefi psichas ha'mekor shel ata. But of course, it is the case that there are all sorts of things that should have been true according to that which is true now. V'nishtanu mikoach ha'bechira. However, they changed due to bechira. So then the future will change as well. So it sounds like he's saying that God knows the choices a person may make. He also knows a person's natural inclinations, but he doesn't actually know the choices that the person will make. The Shla even argues that the Ramban is of this opinion. Now the Shla's reading of the Ramban is questionable. I would have thought that the simple reading of the Ramban is not this way, but this is how he reads the Ramban. He quotes the Psukim from Dvarim Lamed Aleph, which say, you see it bolded on page 12, Ki yadati es yitzro asher hu oseh hayom, b'terem avianu el haaretz asher nishbati. Kadosh Baruch Hu says that I'm bringing Klal Yisrael into Eretz Avas Chalav Udvash, and things are going to go sour because Yadati es Yitzro. Now, what does that mean? So the Ramban writes below, V'tam ki Yadati es Yitzro asher hu osa yom, kitam ki yarei Elokim ata, shehi hayedia befoal. The Ramban compares this to another pasuk, the pasuk that stated after the Akedah, Ata yadati ki yarei Elokim ata. And this, of course, is a problematic pasuk because it implies that only after the Akedah does God know something. Now, what does that mean? So the Ramban there explains that God's knowledge originally was bekoach, or in potential, while subsequent to the Akedah, his knowledge is befoal, in actuality. Shla understands that means that initially God's knowledge is not is somewhat indeterminate because the future is not fixed. God knew that Avram had the fortitude to pass the test, like the pasuk says, "Ki yadati es Yitzro." God's knowledge of the future is based off of a knowledge of our Yetzer. However, it was not befoal in the sense that God did not know what actually would happen. Ki hayediyah be'asid, the Ramban says, is yediyah be'koach. It's only knowledge in potential. Another place that the Shla could have cited where the Ramban might be saying this, though, again, it's questionable, is the Ramban's treatment of the Meraglim. The Ramban writes that God instructed the Meraglim, or God told Moshe that the Meraglim should be great people, they should be Gedolim, because he hoped that they would be successful in their mission. And moreover, the Ramban says, he commanded the mission, making it a mitzvah, once again making it more likely that they would succeed insofar as they're fulfilling a mitzvah. Now, in this context, the Ramban writes that God knows the future. So the question is, what does the Ramban mean when he says that he chose tzaddikim and he made it a mitzvah, hoping that they would therefore succeed, if it is also the case that he says that they know the future? Now, if you learn like the Shla, it's very meduyak. The Ramban is saying that God made sure that they're tzaddikim, meaning to say he instructed to choose people capable of passing the nisayon of the Meraglim, but in fact, it may not be the case that they were going to do so, and in fact, they didn't. I'll just read you some key lines from the Ramban on this. It's the Ramban in Bamidbar, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Beis. He says, Vashem ha-yodeya asidos, tzivo shi-yishlach ish-echad mikol matos Yisrael, v'shiyu ha-nesiyim shebahem, ki chafetz Hashem shi-yiyu shavim be-inyan kol ha-gdolim, ulai yizkiru v'yashuvu el Hashem. Ulai. And the Ramban says a little later, Vaya kol zeh, ki Hashem chafetz l'man tzidko shetia shlichos b'mitzvaso v'shetia b'chol shivteyem uvigdolehem l'man yinatzlu. Sounds like God was really rooting and hoping we would succeed, though in fact, we failed. Now, again, this is a difficult Ramban, and it's not clear that that is the correct reading. Another place that the Shla cites where this theory emerges is from prophecies concerning the future. One of the most famous is in Dvarim, Perek Dalet. We read it on Tisha B'Av. Ki solid banim uvnei banim v'no shantem ba'aretz v'ishchasem v'ishchatem v'asisem pesel t'munas kol. Again on page 12. Now, the Ramban notes that even though this formulation implies that the Jews will certainly sin, in reality, the matter remained contingent. It was in their possibility to remain faithful. And he writes that we see this in what Chazal point out, that there's a remez in the word vinoshantem to the galus, how long the Beis HaMikdash will last and the like. Now, does this mean that the Jewish people knew how long the Beis HaMikdash would last? The Ramban says certainly that's not the case. The Ramban writes, we had a tradition that there was an allusion to the Beis HaMikdash and how long it would last in the word Vinoshantem. However, we didn't know what this allusion was. And only once the destruction actually emerged did we understand the allusion retroactively. And the Shla writes that had the Jewish people not sinned, so the allusion of Vinoshantem would have been fulfilled in some other manner. Thus, allusions in the Torah are not predictive, and they could only be understood retrospectively. This isn't even in legitimate allusions. So, note that the Shla doesn't simply say that we didn't understand the allusion until after the event take place, but he actually implies that the allusions themselves are indeterminate. He writes, Vinoshantem ramzu al minyan vinoshantem tiskaim eretz Yisrael. V'ilu lo chatu lo haya remez hazeh befoal. V'chi tema ma haya remez mishamesh da ki kimo sha'raton kalul mikol ha'hafichim kidepirashti kein ha'torah ki tevoseha v'rimzeha mishtanos leharbe inyanim. V'chilufei chilufeihan v'hakol emes hakol kalul batorah v'abocher yivchar. Okay. So that is, yes. Okay, good question. So that's, it may be the case that what the Shlomo will say, I don't know. I don't remember if he addresses that particular example. That's a question for all thinkers. Does that mean we didn't have free will? And maybe he'll tell me, well, there's no contradiction between divine foreknowledge and free will, but Rambam said that there's a contradiction between human foreknowledge and free will, which would mean that there's a problem. So the Rambam himself, maybe we'll get to this next week, addresses that problem, and he says that those types of vague prophecies don't contradict free will because individuals still retain their freedom. Meaning to say, I could predict that certain things will happen while each individual retains their freedom. So there are a number of ways, and that's a good point, we should get back to that, of addressing that issue besides those of the Shlah. So the answer is, it might be that yes, certain prophecies are fixed. In fact, that might be, there are times that we don't have free will. There are also times, we'll talk about that again next week, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu does seem to take away our free will. So there are a number of ways addressing that question, either distinguishing between general predictions and a individual's free choice, distinguishing between times that God might take away our freedom, and also perhaps what the Shlach says, which is that certain things could be mekuyim in different ways. Okay. The next approach is perhaps the most controversial of all the approaches we'll consider. And this is the, you know what, before we get there actually, bottom of page 12, maybe we'll wait for next week for that. I'll do it quickly at the beginning before most people come, so you won't have to be exposed to such things. Anyway, so the how is it that we know that God knows the future? Meaning to say that we saw in this approach, in the approach of possibly the Ravid or the Shlah or the Ralbag, that it might be the case that God does not know the future. Now, as we mentioned earlier, the mainstream view is that certainly God does know the future, rejecting the Ralbag. And the question is, how do we know that is the case? And does it make sense to question that as the Ralbag does? So the Rivash writes that the way in which we know God knows the future, and this is already explained by the Rambam in Morah Nevuchim Gimel Chaf, again bottom of page 12, it's generally agreed upon that God cannot at a certain time acquire knowledge which he did not possess previously. If it were the case that God didn't know the future, then when the future happens, so then God would be acquiring new knowledge, which would be change, which is impossible for God. Like we saw the Rambam quoting earlier, Ani Hashem lo shinisi. The Rivash makes the same point. V'chein yesh lanu la'amin shi'yidiyaus, yidiyas Hashem Yisbarach, ma'kefes b'chol ma sheyaseh ha'adam b'vchiraso, terem yatsa davar hu b'fo'al, ki ein laseis shum chisaron b'yidiyaso chalila. To say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not know the future would be to say that there's a chisaron in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the chisaron? The chisaron is that there's something that he doesn't know. And if that's impossible, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu must know the future. That's basically what we're saying here. So what would those who question that respond? So first of all, before we get to their response, there are places in Chazal that seem to indicate as well that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the future. Just to take a look at a couple of them, starting from the bottom of page 12, going on to 13. Mitchilas b'yasu shel olam tzaf HaKadosh Baruch Hu ma'aseim shel tzadikim u'ma'aseim shel rishayim hakol tzafui v'rishus nesuna shalu romiim es Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya minayin HaKadosh Baruch Hu mechaye mesim v'yodeya ma she'asid lihiyos amr lehu tavayu min ha'mikra zeh shenemar v'yomer Hashem al Moshe hinach shochev im avosecha v'kam ha'am hazeh v'zana v'dilma kam ha'am hazeh v'zana amr lehu nekutu miya palga b'yadayu v'yodeya ma she'asid lihiyos. Shabbos Lamed Beis Amid Aleph Tana Debe Rabbi Yishmael Ki Pol Hanofel Mimenu Roi Zelipol Misheshes Yimei Bereshes. Again implying that he knew from the beginning. Rashi in Bereshes as well, Vayisatzev Alibo, takes this for granted. However, each of these proofs can be deflected, I think. For example, concerning the first and the fourth, so the Shla answers that God's knowledge, this means that God's knowledge, God has knowledge of a person's potential, but not necessarily what they will actually choose. Concerning the second source, that's not relevant if you learn the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos like the Rav. Concerning sources 3 and 5, so, we'll see that these might not really be a problem when we get to the Rambam's other points next week. But concerning the fact that certain times God may in fact know the future, or his knowledge of the future, like we were saying before, doesn't allows for individuals still to remain free and the like. So what I would say then is that certainly it is the case that the simple reading of Chazal is along the mainstream view that God does know the future, but perhaps there are times that he doesn't. In terms of the other point, so the first point, this is a very strong question, and to appreciate how they might answer this question, it really gets to the question of God existing within time or outside of time, the nature of the existence of time and the like, which is something that we'll return to, I guess, next week when we see the most famous and probably simple of all answers, which is the contradiction doesn't begin, because the contradiction only makes sense within the presumption that God exists within time. In other words, it's only a contradiction within time, and if God created time and exists outside of time, so then it's not a problem. We'll get back to that next week. The next source is on page 13, towards the bottom, we have here the question that I alluded to before, the definition of omnipotence, and the Rambam here, as I mentioned, we do not ascribe to God the power to do that which is impossible. No thinking man denies the truth of this maxim. None ignore it, but such as have no idea of logic. The Rashba makes a similar point in the source below on the bottom of page 13, where he distinguishes between things that are impossible, that we call impossible, but are not inherently impossible. It's impossible to split the sea. Of course, that doesn't apply to God. That's just because laws of physics might say that it's impossible, so God can break those laws. That's what a nace is. Those laws might not even be laws in the first place. But when it comes to something that's inherently impossible, so then that's not the case. Even the Chazon Ish more or less acknowledges that this is true. Very briefly, on page 14, he writes, where it's bolded, aval yesh nimtzaim she'en lahem lo mida velo shetach v'hein nimtzaim b'chiyuv velo yitzuyar bahem ha'adar v'hein ha'muskalos. When it comes to muskalos, so they are inherently true. For example, kemo beis pa'amim beis heim dalet. There's actually a debate among mathematicians whether the laws of math are necessary or not. Is it possible that, is it true that in all possible worlds, 2 times 2 is 4? Chazon Ish is taking for granted one view on that debate over here. Ukimo amuskal shalachson odef al haorech ukiyotze bahen min amuskalos she'en lemuskal musagim mimusage guf. The reason why these things can be inherently true is because they're totally non-physical. Ve'en eis lemitziusam, they're not created. You see, this relates to a very interesting question. We assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything. Hu mamtzi kol nimtza. Well, if that's true, so then how could you also say that it is necessarily true that 2 plus 2 is 4? That would indicate that God did not create that fact because it's inherently true. And his answer is no, because something like that, which is inherently true, is not created, and therefore it doesn't contradict the notion that God created everything. He writes, "V'lo noldu me'olam, v'lo yamusu li'olam." Now with this he answers a very interesting question, which is, take a look at the beginning, and this will be our last point. V'yesh mi ba'alei dimyon ha'sho'alim, ma narviach im naskim sheyesh le'olam mamtzi, acharei she'ninu muchrachim laskim shebore olam nimtza, ve'en eis l'haschalaso, u'mitziuso nitzchis, v'harei hadra koshi l'duchta, eich efshar l'nimtza b'lo havaya. Here he's referring to the argument by design, or really actually another argument that we mentioned several weeks ago. There are those that say that how do we know that God exists? Because the world exists, and something must have caused the world to come into existence, and therefore God must exist, because that's the only thing that could account for the existence of the world. A simple argument, one which we mentioned before. Now the Chazon Ish says that a person might question that argument. They might say, well, why does God exist? It must be that something caused him to come into existence. And the answer has to be, well, no, God always existed. Well, once you acknowledge the possibility of God always existing, so maybe the universe always existed. So there might be a scientific refutation to that question, but what about a philosophical refutation? And the Chazon Ish's answer is no, because things can always exist as long as they're totally non-physical. They're inherent. They're not created. And that's where he draws this analogy to 2 plus 2 equals 4. In other words, that always existed. It need not be the case that God created it. And the same thing with respect to God. It's possible to say that God always existed. So the question of who created God isn't a question. Whereas when it comes to something like the world, something physical, which by definition cannot be eternal, so then we have to say that there must be a God. Now, there's a general major objection. How could it be that God is bound by the laws of logic? And isn't it, I think even more problematic is, isn't it totally presumptuous of us to assume that we could figure out the laws of logic and thereby constrict and restrict God? After all, it's not like the laws of logic were told to us in the Torah. We came up with them on our own. And we are feeble, limited, finite humans. Maybe we're making a mistake. How could we say something is inherently true and thereby say God could not violate it? That's a very good question. Very briefly, maybe another time we'll get back to it, but I think the answer is it's such a good question that it's hard to imagine that anyone actually thinks that God is fully bound by the laws of logic. As though it does seem that that's what the Rambam's saying at first. What I think the Rambam probably means is that it's not problematic if it were the case that God is bound by logic, but not that it is actually the case. Alas, we're out of time, so I wish you a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll pick up next week.
Thank you, everybody.